Now we're holding Peites Amud Beis by the Mishnah, so seven lines from the bottom. We talked about in the previous Mishnah and the Gemara on it, if a woman has, we said if she has a get and no ksuba, or ksuba and no get, what are the dinim as far as what she can collect and what she can't collect? So now continuing on that topic of ksubas and gittin, the Mishnah says shnei gittin or shnei ksubas. Suppose that the woman brings out two gittin and two ksubas. Where we're talking about that each ksuba is dated before the corresponding get. So she has ksuba number one followed by get number one, and ksuba number two followed by get number two. Where the idea would be, in other words, what happened over here? So her husband divorced her and then remarried her and wrote her a new ksuba. Now we're going to learn at the end of the Mishnah that usually he wouldn't have done that. Usually he would just remarry her with the first ksuba still being in effect. But here you could have that he actually wrote her out a new ksuba. Maybe she wasn't willing to remarry him unless he did that, whatever the case. So now, goyva shtei ksubas. So now she's entitled to collect both ksubas because after all, it means that the first ksuba is still outstanding, and so is the second one. We're going to see in the Gemara why we don't just say that the second one overrides the first one. We'll get back to that in the Gemara, but first, that's the basic thing. Now, shtei ksubas v'get echad, what if she has two ksubas but only one get? So both ksubas are dated before the one get. Now, why would there be two ksubas? So actually, we're not really going to talk about in the Gemara about the case where there are two ksubas and two gittin, because then it's obvious she can collect both. Yeah, she has the first one is still outstanding, and the second one is still outstanding because each one was from a separate marriage. So no question about that. But when we say she has two ksubas and one get, the question is going to be, so what was the purpose of the second ksuba if the first one was still in effect? That we'll discuss in the Gemara. So shtei ksubas v'geta, how if she has two ksubas and one get that follows both of them, or ksubo shnei gitin, or she has one ksuba and two gitin, or she has a ksuba and a get showing that she was divorced and she has edim that her husband died. In all those cases, she collects only one ksuba. The reason why when she has two ksubas and only one get, we'll see in the Gemara why. And as far as the other ones, when she has only one ksuba, then it doesn't matter that there were two gittin. It means, in other words, we assume, like we said before, he remarried her. The first ksuba was still in effect, and now he divorced her again, but it's still only one ksuba. And in the case of ksuba get to misa, then also there's only one ksuba. So the fact that he divorced her doesn't matter that she has evidence that her husband died. So in a goyva el ksuba achas, she collects only one ksuba because the rule is shamagadash ishtoi vechzira, when a husband divorces his wife and then remarries her, al manas ksuba harishonim achzira, then usually we assume he's remarrying her al manas on condition that the first ksuba is still in effect rather than that he should be writing her out a new ksuba. So in the ratio of the Mishnah, he actually did, and both of them are still outstanding. Therefore, she collects both of them. But in all the other cases of the Mishnah, we say there's only one current ksuba. So the Gemara asks, in the case when she said we had two ksubas and one get. So we say that she can collect only one ksuba, but the implication is iboya bahai govya, iboy bahai govya. The implication is that she could collect with either one. Or it's really in the form of a question, really. Iboya bahai govya, iboya bahai govya. Are you telling me that she could be goiva equally well with each one of them? Now you think about it. So you think about it. The first one has the advantage in that the shibud goes back earlier. The first one is dated earlier. Therefore, she'll be able to take from lekuchas, from people who bought property from her ex-husband, from an earlier date than using the second one. So are you telling me that that's in fact the case? And we don't say the second one overrides the first one and the shibud begins only as of when the second one was written. Well, does that mean that we have here a refutation of what Rav Nachman said in the name of Shmuel? The Amr of Nachman Amr Shmuel, we learned this earlier in the Masechta, Shnei Shtaris Hayotzim B'Zachazeh, if we have two Shtaris, let's say two documents of sale on the same field, and that come out one after the other, and the second one is dated later than the first, we say Bitol Sheni Es Harishon. The second one cancels the first one. So that being the case, then it would mean in our case over here, if we applied that to the Ksubas as well, we would say that it would mean the second one cancels the first one. Means for whatever reason they decided the first one is no good, and they agree, and she agreed with her husband to have a new one written out, which is where the Shibud is going to start as of now rather than as of when they originally got married, and therefore she can't use the first one at all. And yet here we seem to be saying that she collects one, but the Mishnah doesn't specify which one, which could imply that she could use either one. So our Mishnah seems to contradict Rav Nachman. So the answer is Lav Itman Allah. Don't you know that there was said about that in connection with that din when we learned it earlier in the Masechta. Rav Nachman will agree that the first one is not necessarily completely bottled. That if he added in the second document even one palm tree, then it means he wrote the second shtar not in order to cancel the first shtar, but in order to say the first shtar is still in effect. And in addition, I'm adding this second one. In addition, I'm adding this tree. This is, by the way, in Rambam Gimel Prakim, we're currently beginning Hilchos Chiyo Matana. This actually comes up. This din comes up in a couple of days there. Therefore, by the same token over here, Hachanami B'Deosifla, the same thing. If we're talking about the second Ksuba has something extra over the first one, it has a larger value in it. Then we would say that it means that he's adding to that. So we had before on Daf Mem Gimel Mem Dalad, we had a discussion about such a thing when you have two ksubas over there. There the situation was you had there you had a situation, a father married off his daughter. And we said that now if she so her first ksuba, if her chosen dies while or divorces her while she's an arusa, then the ksuba belongs to her father. But then the second ksuba, if he marries her off again, or if she's widowed, then the ksuba belongs to her. And we said Rabbi Yehuda Omer Harishon Shel Av. So we had a whole discussion over there about this business of two ksubas. Where we said if the second one is larger than the first one, then do we say that in fact he's adding to that one, or the fact is he didn't actually put in the words "I'm adding something extra." So we had a whole sugya about it over there, but we mentioned this point that when you have two shtaris on the same field, so the second one doesn't necessarily cancel the first one. It means that now Rashi actually learns that again based on that Gemara earlier on Daf Mem Gimel, since he didn't explicitly say in the second ksuba "I am adding to the first one," then what it means is she can use either one or the other, but she doesn't get to use both of them, not in the sense that she can't collect both amounts, that's obviously no finish, but in other words, that she can't, for example, say, "I want to use the first one because it's Shibud begins earlier, but I also want to use the second one because it has the extra amount in it." It's one or the other, Rashi says. Either she can use the earlier one, and that gives her the advantage that now she has an earlier Shibud, so if there's property that her husband sold between the first and second Ksuba, she can take that property to collect her Ksuba, but she'll only get the smaller amount that's not first ksuba, or she can choose to use the second ksuba, and then she'll get the larger amount, but then she can only be toedif from things that were sold as of the date of the second one. That's how Rashi learns. Other Rishonim disagree and say that maybe she would in fact be able to use both of them, each one for the advantage of it. So that's what it means that she collects one ksuba. She can use whichever one. According to Rashi, only one, not the other. Once she uses one, it's not the other. And according to some other Rishonim, maybe she can use each one for its own thing. Okay. Tana Rabban. Hotzia get uksuba umisa. Suppose that we said in the Mishnah that she brings out a get as well as a ksuba, and she also has an edim that her husband died. So now she wants to collect two ksuba. Now she wants to collect two ksubas. One for the fact that she's claiming that her husband divorced her and never paid her ksuba. Then she's saying he remarried her again and gave her another ksuba. And now there's still that one outstanding. So now our Mishnah had just said that she gets only one ksuba. The Braisa says it depends. Im get kodim l'ksuba, if the date of the get is before the one ksuba that she's bringing out, then it means that obviously he must have written her a second ksuba when they remarried. Therefore, goiva shtei ksubas. Therefore, she has grounds to collect two ksubas. One for the fact that she was divorced, and another one for the fact that they were remarried, and now her husband is dead. Ksuba kodemus leget. But if she has the ksuba is dated before the get, ain't a goiva el ksuba achas, then she can collect only one ksuba, because we said shamagarish asishav echzira amnas ksuba harishon echzira, because when he divorces her and remarries her, we assume that it's on the basis of the first ksuba. So therefore, as our Mishnah had said, in that case she's entitled to only one ksuba. Okay. Mishnah says katan shehisiyei aviv. Now, suppose that a boy, was married off by his father. Now, we've learned a number of times in our Masechta that a girl can be married off by her father, and those kedushin are valid on a daraisa level. But for a boy, it's not like that. A boy doesn't have the ability to make his own kedushin when he's below 13 and doesn't have shtei sires. His father doesn't really have the right to either. So therefore, this marriage doesn't really exist. But eventually, he grows up. So ksubasa kayemis, the ksuba is still in effect. Shamanas ken kima, because it was on that condition that he stayed married to her. So therefore, in other words, so even though when they got married, it wasn't really a marriage, nevertheless, now it becomes a marriage, and therefore the ksuba that was written when he was a katan still remains in effect. Similarly, the Mishnah says, gershnis gaira ishtar imai, if a ger together with his wife became gerim. Ksubasa kayemes, then also huksuba is in effect. Shamanas ken kima, because again, it was on that condition that he kept her married. Now, how do goyim come to have ksuba? There is a very interesting explanation that the Tosfos Rid says that we're talking about over here, that we're talking about a Jewish woman was married to a goy, to a goyish man, and now this goy became a yid. So now they're staying married, and now the question is as far as ksuba. Pretty much everybody else disagrees with the Rid on that, because in particular, the Mishnah is not going to be telling us a din that would apply only when somebody did an Aveira. For a Yid to marry a Goy is a pretty serious Aveira. So therefore, they talk about different possibilities. Do we mean that one possibility, in fact, is that they had written a ksuba while they were still goyim, especially back in those times, the concept of a ksuba existed among the goyim as well, not with all the tekonas chachamim and everything, but the basic concept that a woman should be entitled to something after her husband dies or divorces her. You have it in secular law nowadays. You have alimony and other such things. So they would have had something like that. So in this case, the question is what happens after they become gay. Or the possibility is maybe they never wrote a ksuba in the first place. And now the question is, do we have to write a ksuba at all? Do we say that this is now considered a marriage? And we're going to discuss in the Gemara also, how much would the ksuba be? So the Gemara starts off, Amar Rav Huna, lo shonu ela mona mosai. This that we're talking about in our Mishnah, that the child's wife, that the boy's wife, or that the ger and his wife, that were saying that they can collect the ksuba only the basic 100 if she was a ba'ula, or 200 if she was a basula. Abel Tosfos ain law, but Rav Huna says she wouldn't be entitled to the Tosfos because the shtar is not really worth anything. The shtar was written when the husband was a katan or when the husband was a goy, and therefore it's not really much of a shtar. So the Tosfos, which is only written in the shtar, she can't get. But the basic 100 or 200, which is based on a Tanai based in, we're there. It doesn't even matter whether there's a physical shtar or not. As we've learned earlier in the Perek, you have places where they didn't even bother writing the shtar. They just relied on the Tekonas Chachamim. So then Rav Huna is saying it means that the Kotten's or the Kotten's wife or the Giyotis is entitled to the basic 100 or 200. But Rav Yehuda, after the Tosfos Yeshla, Rav Yehuda says no, she would even be entitled to the Tosfos. Now, so Tosfos asks, according to Rav Huna, what's the chiddush? The fact is, any Jewish married woman has a ksuba. Now, first of all, Tosfos points out, what?
How can you consider this gerus to be a valid gerus when it's for the purpose of marriage to begin with?
Okay, so according to the Tosfos Reed's explanation, you would have a problem because, again, he explains that you're talking about a Jewish woman and a Goyish man. Even then, though, it's not always that a ger in such a situation is converting for the purpose of marriage. You actually have the example that that in the times of the Gemara, where one of Shmuel's daughters named Rachel was taken prisoner by Goyim, and one of the Goyim over there raped her, and she actually became pregnant from him, and that's the Amor Rav Mori bar Rachel was her son. But later on, this Goy decided to become a Yid, and he's called in the Gemara Isu Giyora. So they did end up getting married, but he didn't get married. He didn't become a ger for the purpose of getting married. He became a ger, I guess, because ultimately he was impressed by her Yiddishkeit and by her emunah and so on and so forth. So you could have similar cases. But again, that's only according to the Tosfos Reed's explanation of the scenario. According to everybody else, that we're talking about two goyim who were married, and now the two of them, and now the couple together became Jews, there's certainly no problem with that. If each of them is motivated on their own that they want to become a Yid, or even if one of them convinces the other, it doesn't matter, whatever. The point is, neither one is doing it for the sake of marriage. They're doing it l'shem shemayim, so then such a thing is certainly acceptable. I wouldn't say meisim b'chol yom because it's not that common, but there certainly are cases that I know of entire families who become gerim together. So yeah, it happens.
About a Jewish wife with a Goyish husband.
Again, that's only according to the Tosfos Reed. And the Tosfos Reed obviously would have to understand that we're talking about that the husband is not converting for that Beis Din knows that he's not converting for the purpose of marriage, but rather that he's converting really l'shem shemayim. Yeah, I mean, in general, Bata Dinim are going to be weary of such things, but nevertheless, they do happen. I guess you might say nowadays, Bata Dinim have more reason to be wary about it because after all, a person can become a Yid and there's no particular danger or no particular legal disability that they're putting themselves under or whatever, just that they have to keep Torah and mitzvahs. But as opposed to, let's say, a few hundred years ago where a person became a ger, he's putting his life in his hands because it was illegal in most countries for a person to be Niskayer, then you would have much more reason to say that if he's doing it, he's actually doing it l'shem shemayim. But anyway, yeah, I mean, the Tosfos Reed isn't getting into that level of detail. He's just saying that's the scenario we're talking about. He doesn't go into the level of detail of why it is afterwards that the husband is converting. So Tosfos points out, first of all, that the fact is, we wouldn't say the shtar is valid enough for her to be able to collect from the shabodim as with a usual ksuba. Because there's no question, this shtar wasn't really valid enough for that purpose in the first place. Even Rav Huna would have to agree with that. So Tosfos says, though, the chiddush is, suppose that in the two cases of our Mishnah, the boy or the goy and his wife, suppose that she was a basula at the time. So now, by the time the boy grows up, or by the time the couple becomes gerim, she's no longer a basula. Nevertheless, Rav Huna is saying what the Mishnah is telling us when we say subasa kayemis and shalmanas kein kima means that she would be entitled to full 200. Because after all, he did marry her as a basula, and therefore we would follow that and say that she's entitled to the ksuba of a basula. Now, the Rambam disagrees. The Rambam says that the ksuba would be a mona, and so the Nosa Kalim and the Rambam discuss why exactly, according to him, what's the chiddush of the Mishnah, and one of them is, in fact, the idea that there should have to be a ksuba here at all. Or again, we could talk about, let's say, the one explanation, I think the Chelkas Mechoikik and Shulchan Aruch says that, yes, we could be talking about, like we said before, suppose that he actually wrote her out of ksuba while they were goyim. As I said, the goyim had a concept of ksuba in those days as well. So therefore, we could be talking about that. That we're saying that ksuba, since he wrote out 200, then therefore that's still in effect, even though now she's a ba'ula. There is an interesting tshuva of Rav Moshe on the subject. He deals with a case of a Jewish couple that had been married civilly, and now some years later, after they were married in a civil marriage for a while, now they want to have chuppah b'kiddushin, so a ksuba has to be written. And the question is, how much should the ksuba be, 100 or 200? So based on our Mishnah and based on And based on the Yana Poiskim that we just discussed, Ramosha goes into a long discussion about it and concludes that the real proper thing is that the Ksuba should indeed be 200. But he says, just to be on the safe side, we shouldn't just do that unilaterally. We should try to explain to the Chosin and convince him that it should be 200, and that we can, and even he says, we can even write Basulta Da in the Ksuba. We can even write that she's a Basula, even though right now she's not, in order to spare her embarrassment, and so on and so forth. He has a whole long trova on the subject. Anyway, so again, Rav Huna is saying that not the Tosfos Ksuba, because that depends on the shtar, and the shtar isn't really worth anything, having been written when he was invalid to write such a shtar, a cotton or a goy, as the case may be. Whereas Rav Huna is saying she does get the Tosfos. So the Gemara says, basically, I have a contradiction against Rav Huna. A braisa says, chidshu, if they added something to the original ksuba, netelas mashachidshu, then she gets what they added to the ksuba, implying chidshu ein loy chidshu loy, implying only if now, after the cotton became a gadol, or after the goy became a ger, if then he added something, then we would have, like what we were saying in the Gemara on the previous Mishnah, that now it means the second ksuba, it means that we've added something to the ksuba, and she's entitled to that, implying, but if they didn't add anything, then she's not entitled to only to the basic 100 or 200. So the answer is no. You could say ema af mashachidshu. No, Rabbi Yehuda could understand the braisa to be saying that they get also what was added. So they would get the original mono mosayim from the original ksuba, which was the ikur ksuba, plus whatever tosfos ksuba the husband had decided at the time to give her, plus now, if he adds something else, then she gets that as well. So Gemara says, v'hole toniachi, but that's not what another braisa says. Maybe it's the same braisa. A braisa says chidshu if they added something new in the ksuba, netelas mashachidshu, then she's able to collect what they added. Loy chidshu, and if they didn't add anything, besula goyva masayim v'almona mona. Then if she was married as a besula, if she's still a besula at the time, as the case may be, then she collects 200. And if she's an almona, she collects only a mona. Tiyufta de Rav Yehuda. So that's a clear refutation against Rav Yehuda. So now the question is, so what was Rabbi Huda thinking? Where did he get the idea that she should get the Tosfos, which now we just slugged up? The answer is Rabbi Huda masnisin at ite. The answer is Rabbi Huda was misled by the wording of our Mishnah. When the Mishnah says, in the case of the wife of the cotton who is now a gadol, or the case of the wife of a goy who now becomes a ger, the Mishnah had said, ksubasa kayemes, that her ksuba is in effect. He thought, akula milsakoi, that it's referring to the entire ksuba, both the ikur and the tosfos. Velohiya ikur ksuba koi, but in fact, the Mishnah never meant that. The Mishnah meant that only she gets the ikur ksuba, like Rav Huna had said, and as the Braisa clarifies. So therefore, so Rav Yehuda's understanding of that, we don't use Rav Yehuda's understanding of the Mishnah, we use Rav Huna's understanding, and that's the halacha. She's only entitled to the mono mosayim, but not the tosfos. And now you have, again, as we said, as Tosfos says, if she was originally married as a Basula, then even if now she's a Ba'ula, she still gets the 200. And according to the Rambam, not, but according to the Rambam, the fact that right now she's a Ba'ula means that she only gets the 100. When the fact that right now, that is when they're misgayer, or when the boy grows up, that now she's already a Ba'ula, then she's only entitled to 100. Okay, Hadron Lacha Kosev Leishtei. The next perek, we're going to continue on this topic of collecting the ksuba. One thing we're going to be focusing on a lot in this perek is the ksubas benin dichrin. So we talked about it earlier in the Masechta. We said it's one of the tnoi ksuba. So to recap, the ksubas benin dichrin is that the amount that was supposed to be for the wife's ksuba, if she dies before her husband does, then that amount is earmarked for her children, and that is, we set that aside from the rest of the Yerusha, we give it to her children with him before we split the Yerusha between the rest of the Yerusha. So in other words, the simple case would be, now we're going to discuss in the Mishnah, the basic case would be where he had two or more wives. So let's say he was married to Rachel and to Leah. Suppose, for example, that Rachel's ksuba is larger than Leah's, then Rachel's children are going to be inheriting more, and Leah's children, so Rachel's children will have their mother's ksuba earmarked for them. Leah's children will have it earmarked for them. And then if Rachel's ksuba is larger, it means that Rachel's children are getting more. And then whatever's left, they split equally among them. That's the concept of ksubas minin dichrin. We learned earlier in Masechta the reason behind it. We actually related it to a pasuk in Yirmiyah that the Chachamim were concerned that a father, when he's marrying off his daughter, may not want to give her much of a dowry, much of an adunya. He may say, why should I bother? That, after all, there's a good chance that that money may not remain in my family, because what happens, for example, if she doesn't have, what happens, for example, if she has fewer children with him than his other wife does, or if she has no children with him at all, then all of the Yerusha is going to end up going to his children from some other wife, and why should we bother? So therefore, the Chacham came up with the concept of Ksumas Bnei Dichrin. So therefore, as long as she has children from him, then as long as she has boys from him specifically, then those boys will yaushin that Ksuba, including that Nidunya, and therefore the father, to begin with many years earlier, is more likely to give her a large Nidunya in the first place. So now our Perek is going to be dealing with all the ins and outs of this din of Ksubas Minin Dichrin. So the Mishnah says, Mishoy Nosi Shtei Noshin. A man was married to two wives, Umes, and then he dies. So then, and neither of his wives collected. So now suppose that both of his wives, so first of all, you could have, if the two wives are still alive, Horishona Kagemis Lashnia. So first of all, the first one, the one he married first, has the first rights to collect her Ksuba ahead of the second one. And likewise, suppose that the wives died before they had a chance to collect the ksuba, then the yoshim of the first one are entitled to collect ahead of the yoshim of the second one to collect the ksubas ben indifrin. Continues the Mishnah, Noso Sidishon of a Mesa. Now, what happens if he married the first wife and then she died, and then now he remarried and now he died. So now what you have is in other words, in short, the first wife died before him. The second, Rachel, died before him. Leah outlived him. So then, Shnia v'yosheha, Kodman the Yosher Rishona, then the din is that Leah, the second wife, comes ahead, and her Yoshim come ahead of the first wife. The reason is because in that case, the first wife and her Yoshim are considered Balei Chot. They're entitled to the ksuba, not by the special takana of ksuba spinin nichrin, but just by the plain fact that she's owed the ksuba, like any other wife whose husband died. So therefore, she and then her heirs who want to collect that are like regular balei chovis. So we have to pay off the balei chov before the other children can yaushin their portion. The ones who are collecting because of Rachel, the first wife, they're collecting as a Yerusha. We learned earlier in the Masechta, that there were actually two different versions of the Mishnah going around. One said that the line was Yisvu, and that these children should take their portion, which therefore makes that they're considered like Balei Chov. The other possibility, we said, when this is the Halacha, is Yirsun Tanan, that they inherit. So therefore, they're considered to be Yoshim. Well, as Yoshim, the Chov has to be paid off first before they can get their Yerusha. So in that case, that results in the din of our Mishnah that the second wife or her children, they have first rights to collect her ksuba, and only then, whatever's left after that, will the sons of the first one who died while her husband was alive, and now you have ksuba spinin nichrin, only then will they be able to collect.
What the B'nai B'nichrin is also considered a
Choy? No, it's not. It's considered a Yerusha. That's the point. It is one of the Tnoi Ksuba, but we consider it a Yerusha. That's the thing. Yerustun Tnan, the proper wording in the Mishnah is Yerustun. They inherit, and therefore, yeah. So the Gemara says, Midikatoni Harishoni Kodemus Lashnia. Now let's look at the wording in the Mishnah. It said that in the first case, when both of them were still alive when he dies, we said the first one comes ahead of the second one. Now, obviously, Rashi explains, we have to be talking about where there's not enough money available to pay off both ksubas. If there was, then we don't have to be talking about kaidemas. Each one is going to collect their own, and there's no problem. So, but the expression is that she comes first. V'loikotoni harishoni yesh lavashnia ein. We don't, the expression in the Mishnah was not, the first one can collect her ksuba, and the second one cannot. Niklal, so we see from that wording of the Mishnah, de'ikodma shnia v'tofsa, that if the second one were to go ahead and grab property in order to collect her ksuba, loy matkin and mina, we would not take it away from her. In other words, kaidemes rishon kaidemes lashnia means lahatchila. We're gonna, if we come to Beis Din, then lahatchila Beis Din is gonna say the first one has first dibs on the estate. But if the second one went and grabbed some on her own, then we would say that what she did was valid. Now, the problem with that is, Shmamina bal choiv ma'ucha shekodem megava mashad gava gava. Does that mean that we can learn from that that in a similar case with Balei Chovos, if a person owes money to both Reuven and Shimon, and he borrowed first from Reuven and only later on from Shimon, are we going to say that if Shimon goes and grabs property to satisfy his debt, that we would say that that's valid, and he can? The fact is, later on in the parak, we're going to have a machlokas about that. We're actually going to end up saying that in most cases the halacha is that loy gava, that it's not valid because his claim comes only second. In fact, Tosfos gets into a long discussion over here why that should be so. One thing is Tosfos points out, brings from the Rashbam, that it's one thing, for example, we know we allow a Baal Chayv to collect from buyers. The reason is, why do we give the Baal Chayv precedence over people who bought property? Because Shalai Tino Delis, we don't want the door to be locked against people who want to borrow money. But over here, when we're talking about one Baal Chayv against the other, so then we're not going to say a person is not going to want to borrow, is not going to want to lend money, because what if a previous creditor has it first? He's not going to say that. And Tosfos gets into a long discussion about that in terms of the dinim of Erchin, where we say that a later chayv is valid to collect. And so Tosfos says maybe there's a difference between hekdesh and hedyet, or maybe here we're talking about metaltlin, and we'd be following the opinion of Remeir that says metaltlin on the shubad to the ksuba. So Tosfos has a long discussion about the ins and outs of that. Anyway, so the our Mishnah seems to be implying, again, in the case of the two wives, that if Leah, that again, the guy died when both Rachel and Leah are still alive, now we're saying, even though he married Leah second, the implication is Rachel is kedemus, l'chatchila, she should be getting first dibs, but if Leah went and got first, then she can keep what she gets. But that would mean the same thing would apply to Balei Chovos, and the fact is not so. So the answer is, la'olam emalach masha gava loy gava. No, you can answer that usually in the case of Balei Chovos, we say if the second one tries to collect ahead of the first one, it doesn't work. Umay kaidemus legamri katani. The word kaidemus doesn't necessarily have to mean lachatchila. It can mean entirely that she has first dibs and the other one has no rights at all if there's nothing left. Kidatan, just like we have in a Mishnah in connection with the dinim of Yerusha, ben koidim labas. We say a son comes ahead of a daughter. Now, we don't mean the son takes the Yerusha and then if there's anything left, the daughters get it. And we know it means the sons get the entire Yerusha. It means koidim only in the sense of if there's no sons, then the daughters inherit, like with fluff. So the same thing over here, Rishona kodemus l'shnia, could just mean if there's no Rishona, then the Shnia is able to collect. Let's say the Rishona already was paid off, then the Shnia gets her, whatever, well, she dies, so must be an indifferent, but yeah. So it would mean, in other words, kodemus doesn't necessarily mean first and then second.
The indifferent is not everyone, it all depends if they make it up, right?
No, ksumas min indifferent is a tnaik suba. So it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether, as we learned earlier in our masechta on that different base, even if it wasn't written into the ksuba, it's considered to be in effect. The fact is, already in the time of the Ga'onim, they say we're not really so particular about it for a number of reasons, one of them being that we discussed at the time, since the original takana was to encourage fathers to give a nice nedunia for their daughters, eventually that became unnecessary. Eventually, if anything, people splurge too much on weddings. So therefore, beginning from the time of the Gaonim already, they started saying, we don't have to be so picky about this ksubas min indichrin. Practically speaking, anyway, it really only applies if a man is married to two wives, and after Chayim Be'ben Gershim, you don't have that anyhow. So yeah. Anyway. So that's one version of how the discussion went. Ikadamri, another version is it was the other way around. On the other hand, the Mishnah does not clearly say that if the second one goes and grabs, then we don't take it away from her. That would imply that if the second one does grab, we still take it away from her because the first one has first rights. That would show that in the case of the Balei Chovos, it wouldn't work. Now, fine, granted, that's the halacha, as we say later on in the parak, but still, we don't bring this Mishnah as a proof one way or the other in that discussion, implying that our Mishnah has nothing to do with that.
It is being brought here.
No, here we're bringing it, but later on that side of Dalad, when we discuss this point, we're not going to be bringing it. So the answer is, and besides, how would the Amora who holds that Masha Gava Gava, how is he going to hold? He can't contradict the Mishnah. So the answer is, La'olam Emalach Masha Gava Gava. No, our Mishnah could be implying that the first one is that if the second one took it, then b'dieved, what they took is valid. We could say, since the Mishnah is going to say in the last part that in the case where the first wife died while he's alive and the second one outlived him, that we say then the second one comes, the second one has first rights because she's a Baal Chayv, and there it has to use the word Kodman, the Yosha Roshona, and there you can't use the expression Im Kodmu B'Tofsu, because the fact is, of course, they're Tofus, they have a Shibun because they're a Baal Chayv. So therefore, necessarily there, so you can't say anything in there about whether you would take it away from them or not. So therefore, Tananami Orishona Kodemus the Shnia. So you could say in the Reisha also, it only says the first one comes ahead of the second one without mentioning what happens if she is Tophus. Since you can't say anything about what happens if they're Tophus in the second part of the Mishnah, then therefore for parallelism, we leave it out of the first part of the Mishnah as well. So, in fact, Tosfos says, so why don't we say the other way around? Maybe the Reisha should have said that point, and then the Sefer should say it as well, even though it's not relevant. So Tosfos says, fine, but it's more important to say it would be more important to say the case of Ein Metzien, because again, we could otherwise misunderstand Kodemus. We could otherwise misunderstand what Kodemus means. So it's more important to stress that Ein Metzien, that we don't take away from somebody who takes ahead of her turn. We said in the Mishnah, Noser Sirishona. We said that if he married the first wife and then she died, and then the second one, and then he married a second one and she outlived him. So we said that we said that she or her Yoshim come ahead of the first one and her Yoshim. So the Gemara says Shmamina Tlas. We see three things that we can learn from this Mishnah. Shmamina Achas Bachaya Ba'achas B'Moisi Yeshlan Tubas Ben Nidrin. Number one, we see exactly this case that even if one of them died while the husband was alive and the second one only after he died, we still say that Ksubas Ben Nidrin is still in effect. What's the chiddush? V'loy chayshinim le'insuyei. We see that we're not worried about there being arguments. In other words, we might have thought it's one thing when both wives died while he's alive. So okay, one has a larger ksuba. So fine, they're both coming with a claim of ksubas bin indichrin. Fundamentally, we said before, ksubas bin indichrin is a type of yerusha. So fine, it's understood they're both yaushining from their respective for what originally was given to their respective mothers. So that's not going to lead to arguments. But when one of them is alive and when one of them outlived him and the other one not, so now you have one of them is one group of children is coming as Yerusha and the other one is coming as Yerusha Sa'av. The one is Yaushining in effect a choiv that was owed to their mother. So in other words, let's consider the children of Leah who outlived the husband. They're coming as Balei Choivs, meaning they're saying we have nothing to do with Yaakov at all. As far as we're concerned, what we're demanding has nothing to do with Yaakov per se, except for the fact that it was his ksuba. It's a choiv that's owed to our mother from the estate, as opposed to Leah's children. Meanwhile, Rachel's children, who Rachel had died years earlier, they're going to be coming as Yoshin, because Yusum Tanan, because we said that the ksuba spinin nichrin is a form of Yerusha. So now there's going to be arguments between them. They're saying, one second, why should you, who are coming as Balei Choivs, why should you be entitled to a greater share of all Yerusha? After all, you're claiming you're coming from the koyach of your mother, Leah, who outlived our father. Very nice. But the fact is, she was married to Yaakov just as much as Rachel, our mother, was. Why should you be entitled to anything ahead of us?
But don't we say a Baal Chayv comes before
you? Fine, a regular Baal Chayv, sure, but not the Baal Chayv that comes to you. They could end up arguing over the fact. They could say this is a different kind of Chayv. They could say this is a different kind of Chayv. And in fact, in this sugya, the Ritva mentions exactly that point. We do say there's a concept called Priyas Baal Chayv Mitzvah. We learned in the previous parak, there is a mitzvah to pay off a Baal Chayv. However, a valid argument could be made that that's with a regular Baal Chayv, where you lent money, where you actually took a loss. Here we're talking about the ksuba. She didn't actually put any money into it. Her father did as in the dunya, or maybe even there was no money put in at all, and there's only the ikur ksuba, there's only ikur and maybe tosfos. So therefore, maybe it shouldn't be that kind of chayv. And nevertheless, we're saying that it is. We're not worried about it arguing. Now, an interesting point in that is there is a machlokas rishonim. Gemara is talking about where, after all, both women are now dead. So one of them died while the husband was alive. The other one outlived him. But now we're saying she also died, and now her children are coming to collect her ksuba that she didn't have a chance to collect while she was alive. What about if she herself, what if Leah herself is still alive? Then you have Rabbeinu Hanano says, and a couple of the other rishonim follow him, let's say that in that case we don't say that the in that case we don't say that the we don't say ksubas minin dichrin, because then we say that then we're going to say osili in suya, then we're going to say there is going to be an argument, because they're going to say you're not a yurish of our father after all, you're a balas choiv, fine, but your choiv shouldn't take precedence over our ability to yaush in the property. On the other hand, most Rishonim learn that not, and they say there's no difference. The din of our Mishnah would apply equally well, whether it's she herself or whether it's her Yoshim that are coming to collect.
Well, she herself, the ksuba is made for her.
Right, but nevertheless, the point is that the Mishnah is saying that the Mishnah is saying that Yeshlan ksubas minin dichrin v'loy chayshinim le'insuye. So Rabbeinu Hanano points out, if she herself is alive, there is the problem chayshinim le'insuye. There is a problem with argument, and therefore maybe we should allow them to yaushin first, and afterwards they'll deal with paying off ksuba.
She has to live.
Fine. She's entitled to mizonis and so forth, but still, not necessarily are we going to say that she has, first rights ahead of them. Again, if she had died and her children are coming to Yaushin, then they're coming to Yaushin Uksuba and to demand it as a choiv, then we're saying they have first rights and we're not worried about Osili and Suye. But if she herself, then maybe we wouldn't say that.
I thought you said that the ones that are coming to collect, who died before the husband died, they come second.
No, so what we said is, right, that's what we said. That's what we said, they come second. So now we're talking about, does that same din apply? So actually what it is Rabbeinu Hananel says what happens is, if Leah is still alive and she's collecting her own ksuba, then Rochel's children don't even get the ksuba spinin dichrin.
Right,
then we say since Leah's children are not yaushening their mother's ksuba because she herself is collecting it, therefore the whole thing of ksuba spinin dichrin falls away in this case, and Rochel's children are not entitled to ksuba spinin dichrin either. Most other Rishonim disagree with that, and they say that they still are entitled to ksuba spinin dichrin. Fine, she'll have first rights because she's a baal choiv, but after that, the other children will get their ksuba spinin dichrin. Okay, so that's one. So mimai, where do we see that the Mishnah is implying that point? That achas b'chayev achas b'moseh midikotani, because the Mishnah had used the expression shnia b'yosher kodman the yosher rishona. We said the second wife Leah and her yoshim come ahead of the yoshim of the first one, implying mikdam hu dekadmi, implying they do have first rights because they're considered a bal choiv ha ika shakli, but implying that if there is enough to pay off the ksubas benin dichrin, then they're going to get. So we see that ksubas benin dichrin is in effect in that case. Number two, we see that the ksuba is considered a moiser for the other one. Now, we touched on this earlier in the Masechta when we talked about ksubas benin dichrin briefly. We're going to discuss it in much more detail in our perek. The whole concept of ksubas benin dichrin applies only if, once we give out the earmarks of the ksubas benin dichrin, if we have at least one dinner of the estate that we can divide among them according to the rules of Yerusha of the Torah. Because the Chum didn't want that their takana of ksubas benin dichrin should completely override the concept of Yerusha min HaTorah. So let's say you had two wives. Let's say, to keep things simple, both of them died while he's alive. We're saying each of their children are entitled to ksubas benin dichrin. So suppose that one had a ksuba of 200 and the other had a ksuba of 400. So we're saying we're going to have to earmark 600 for the ksubas benin dichrin. If the estate is 601 or more, then we do that. Then we give one group of children the 200, the other group the 400, and the one dinner, then we split according to the usual rules of Yerusha. That's called moiser dinner. But if you don't have at least one dinner left, then we override the whole thing. Then we ignore the whole thing. So must be indichrin, and we divide up the Yerusha equally between all the children. Oh well, okay, the Bechor gets a double portion, but fine, we're not talking about that. The point being, in other words, that in this case, we're talking about, again, one wife died before him, Rachel. One outlived him, Leah. We're saying that Leah or her Yerushim are collecting Hoksuba. Now, what happens, for example, suppose the estate was only 600 exactly. So she wants to collect a ksuba of 400. Now, Rochel had a ksuba of 200, let's say. So now, if both wives had died, then we would say there's no ksuba spinin dichrin because the estate is exactly 600 and there's no moiser din. Now, what we're saying, though, instead is, since Leah or her Yoshim are not collecting as ksuba spinin dichrin, since they're collecting as a regular ksuba payment, then that can be considered the moiser. So we can say, in other words, we earmark 200 for Rochel's children. We still have left 400, which can be split. It so happens that 400 ends up going to Leah's children because that was the value of her ksuba. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter, just like it wouldn't matter if there was any regular chayv against the estate. It doesn't take away from the moysa din. That's the point.
We just want to count it as a moysa din.
So we usually want to have a moysa din applies only when we're saying only when otherwise all the money would go for ksubas bin indichrin. But here it's not. Some of it is going for ksubas bin indichrin, and some of it is going for a regular ksuba payment. So we don't care that the ksuba payment is going to eat up the rest of the money, and there's not a moysa din after that. We're still going to say that we still do ksubas bin indichrin. So Rachel's children will get their 200. Leah's children then will end up getting their 400, not as ksubas bin indichrin, but rather as a regular payment of a ksuba. So it wouldn't really matter. So it wouldn't matter whether we wouldn't say that because the estate was only 600, then we don't do that. So we see that from the Mishnah. Mimai, why do we know that? Because the Mishnah didn't say anything about Moshe Dinner. The Mishnah just said that if one of them that if one of them died before him and one of them died after him, we said the Yoshim of the second, she and the second one and her Yoshim come ahead of the first one. We didn't say anything about Moshe Dinner, implying you don't need it.
Then where's our Moshe Dinner?
So that the whole Moshe Dinner we're going to discuss later on in the parak. We're going to have that in the next Mishnah. We're going to discuss that. But in this, but that's again, most of dinner is only when both wives died while he's alive. But here we're talking about one of them outlived him and now is entitled to a ksuba for the fact that her husband died and then left her an amana and she's entitled to a ksuba. Yeah. Ushma mina, and the third thing we can learn from our Mishnah, ksubas bin indichrin like tofa mimashaki. You can see that a ksubas bin indichrin, you can't collect from mishubadim, in from nechos mishubadim in order to pay it off. Not mimai. The isakudaitach tov from the mishabdi. If you were going to say that you could collect from mishabadim, then leisu bnei d'shoina. Then after all, the children of the first one of Rachel could come b'litufinu levnei shniya. They should be entitled to collect from the second one. In other words, what would happen? So Leah's children would be collecting their ksuba, but then Rachel's children would say, one second, there wasn't enough to pay off our mother's ksubas bin indichrin, but we are entitled to collect from mishabadim. Well, you were a bal choyv. Fine, we're entitled to collect from you, like we would from any lekeach or from any bal choyv, because we have first rights, because he married our mother first. The fact that we don't say that, the fact that we're saying that the second one, that she gets her, that she or her children get their amount, and if there's any left, then it goes for the ksubas bin indichrin, shows that that's how it is. They can't collect from mishabadim.
I understand they're collecting, but who says that they could collect from mishabadim?
Normally, a ksuba can be collected from mishabadim, right? But we're saying ksubas bin indichrin cannot. Ksubas bin indichrin can only be collected from property that belonged to the estate at the time when the father died. Yeah, so that's what we're saying. Because otherwise, we would say that Leah's children would collect their chayv, but then Rachel's children have first rights to that chayv because he married Rachel first, and then they would be able to take that away to satisfy ksubas bin nichrin. But we don't, showing that they can't collect from nechasim b'shabadim. They can only collect from nechasim b'nei chayrin, and there aren't enough nechasim left right now. All there is left is whatever was left after Leah took her ksuba. So if there's enough to pay off Rachel's ksubas bin nichrin, then good. But if not, then they end up losing out.
Wasn't Bolshevik was written when he was alive, so then...
Yeah, but still, one came before the other, because he married Rachel first, and then Rachel died, and then he married Leah.
Whatever was sold then was Meshubit from those karkos that he...
Right. So anything that he sold, but we're talking about that anything now that we're talking about now when Leah's children collect Leah's ksuba, that to collect a regular ksuba, you can collect from Meshubadim, right. But to collect for ksubas min indichrin, you cannot. Because again, remember, a regular ksuba means that the wife is still alive after her husband dies, and she's entitled to a ksuba, d'araisa or d'rabanan, as we've touched on earlier in the Masechta. But here we're talking about ksubas bin indichrin. So we're saying that even though the original takana would have been that she's not entitled to a ksuba at all, what do you mean? She died before her husband, the ksuba is gone. But now we're saying instead we earmark that for her children. We do that, but we don't allow them to collect from the chasim b'shabadim. That's the point. Okay. And so maski for Rav Ashi. However, Rav Ashi questions all of that. Mimai, how do we know that all those things that we can infer from the Mishnah are in fact that the Mishnah is implying that? Maybe in fact you could say that in this kind of scenario, ksubas bin indichrin doesn't apply at all. When the Mishnah says that the yoshim of the second wife come ahead of the yoshim of the first wife, we just mean as far as nachla. We don't mean, in other words, that Rachel's children afterwards are going to collect ksubas bin indichrin. They just mean that they're like when you divide an estate, Leah's children have first rights because they have to collect their mother's ksuba, and whatever's left after that is the estate, and then everybody's going to divide. So then you have to ask, then what's the chit? Then why are we calling them Yosha Rishona? They're not yashining from her, they're yashining from the father. So you would say, I did a ton of shni of Yosha, a ton of nami, the Yosha Rishona. Since it has to mention the second one in her Yoshim, and there it has to say that because they were yashining a debt that was owed to her. Then we mention also Yosha Rishona, even though in that case we would say they're not really yashining from her, they're yashining from their father. So no proof of that necessarily. It's just the style in the Mishnah. Yeah. By the way, I should mention all in this connection, there's a Gemara in Shavuos that tells us that all this that we're talking about collecting Ksuba, and this is brought the Halacha in the Poskim, that all of this that we're talking about, who collecting Ksuba, or who Yoshin collecting Ksuba, we learned in the previous Perek that there are a number of cases where the Almana has to swear a Shavua before she can collect Ksuba. Until, we said, for example, among them were when she's collecting from the estate, from Yoshin, because in general, when you collect from Yoshin, you need a Shavua. So until she takes that shavua, we don't consider the ksuba to be an outstanding debt anyway. Only once we'd have to be talking about in the case of Leah over here, who outlived him, that she took this shavua and only then she died. So now we're talking about who Yoshim are entitled to collect the debt. If she never took that shavua, then we don't say that then there's no, they have no ability to collect that ksuba on her behalf anyway. Then if anything, it would be regular ksubas min indichrin. Maybe Ksubas bin Nichrin they'd be able to. I'm not sure about that, but definitely they wouldn't be able to collect it as a regular choiv, and they wouldn't have first rights to it over the children of Rachel, because after all, her mother didn't swear that she's entitled to the Ksubas, so maybe she's not entitled to it.
The fact that they have a Ksuba in their hand
could mean that it was paid off, it could mean, okay. Next. Continues Rav Ashi, Uda Ka'amet Ksuba Nasas Moisel Chaverta. You're saying that the Ksuba that's being paid out to Leah or to her children is considered the Moisel, meaning we're not worried about Moisel Dinu in this case. We don't care whether the estate is more than the value of the two Ksubas combined by one dinner or more. And you're saying you can prove that from the Mishnah, from the fact that the Mishnah didn't say that. Why? Maybe not. Maybe you do actually need a Moisev Dinner. You could say the Mishnah is talking about that case. The Mishnah didn't say in so many words, but maybe the Mishnah is implying that you need Moisev Dinner in order for this whole scenario to work. So at least the first two things you can't really prove from our Mishnah. And maybe the halacha, maybe those things, but Rav Ashi is saying you're trying to prove those dinim from our Mishnah, you can't necessarily do that. So the Gemara says, V'achas b'chaya v'achas b'moise tanoihi. You should know this case where one of the wives died before him and one of them outlived him, and we're talking about whether the second wife's Yoshim are entitled to collect ahead of the first one, is actually machlokas tanoim, the Tanya. Mesu achas b'chaye v'achas b'moisei. Suppose this case, Rachel died while he was alive, Leah died only after him. Ben Nana Soimer, so Ben Nana, so it's a Shimon Ben Nana, so it's mentioned here and there in the Gemara at the end of Bava Metzia, at the end of Bava Basra, it mentions Rabbi Shmuel says on him, Haroitza, Sheyachkin, the Dinim Omenis, Yishamash, a Shimon Ben Nana. So you really want to understand Dinim Omenis, you should learn Torah and serve Ben Nana because he knows these things inside and out. Anyway. So he says, the children of the first one, Rachel, can say to the children of the second one, Bnei Balaschoy Vatem, okay, you're children of a Balaschoy, your mother is owed a debt by the estate. So fine. So take your mother's ksuba and go. Now, what do we mean by go? Necessarily, we have to be talking about there's no moisa dinner. If there's a moisa dinner, then they still have to stick around to collect that. But they're telling them, just take your ksuba and go. In other words, there may not be a moisa dinner. Fine, you're entitled to your mother's ksuba. But after that, we're still entitled to whatever we're still entitled to whatever is left from moisa dinner. We're still entitled to whatever is left for ksubas bin indichrin. So therefore, you have no claims on the rest of it. Which would be exactly what we're saying in the Mishnah. Because in other words, they could argue that maybe Ksubas, that's Rabbi Akiva is going to say Ksubas bin Indichrin is not in effect in this case. So in other words, what would we say that Leah's children are entitled to their mother's Ksuba. So let's say they've taken 400 for that. Now there remains 200. According to Rabbi Akiva, which we're going to say now in the Braisa, we say there's no Ksubas bin Indichrin in this case. And in that case, the 200 is split evenly between Rachel's children and Leah's children.
Oh, it shouldn't be different because there isn't a moisa dinner.
Because there isn't a moisa dinner, right. So, but Banana is saying that no, it doesn't matter whether there's Moisagina or not. Rebekiva.
Because once you're taking anyhow.
Because you're saying, because that payment itself is the Moiser. We're saying, in other words, we do it the other way around. We picture as though 200 was set aside for Rachel's children, for their mother's ksuba. And then at that point, we still have Moiser. That Moiser is the whole rest of the estate, or even it eats into the 200, doesn't matter. The fact is, when we started talking about what's earmarked for ksubas ben nidchin, we at that time, we still saw that there was Moiser. That's according to Ben Nanas. Rabbi Akiva Oma Kfar Kofza Nachla Milifne Bnei Harishona V'Nafla Lifne Bnei Ashniya. Rabbi Akiva says, no, the Nachla has jumped away from, as soon as the husband died, then the Ksubas Bnei Nichon has jumped away from the children of Rachel, and now it becomes a regular Nachla that's equally available to the first one and the second one. So therefore, so in other words, according to him, there's no Ksubas Bnei Nichon in this case. So what's going to happen is, in fact, Rabbi Akiva would say, Rashi says, even if there is Moisur Dinner, then we still say there's no ksubas ben nidchin. We would say Leah's children get their mother's 400, because that's a ksuba that still has to be paid, like a regular ksuba. And after that, whatever's left, all the yoshim, I'm going to split equally. There's no ksubas ben nidchin, says Rabbi Akiva. According to him, ksubas ben nidchin is only when the two wives died while the husband was alive. So, my lav b'hokam iflagi. So, shouldn't we assume that that's the machlokas? The marasa v'achas b'chayev v'achas v'moise yeshlan ksubas ben indichrin. So Benanas would hold that even in that case, you have ksubas ben indichrin. So, therefore, after all, Rachel's children are entitled to their ksubas ben indichrin. So, that's the thing. Once they tell Leah's children, you guys take your 400 and go. After that, the remaining 200 belongs exclusively to us because ksubas ben indichrin. Umar Sofa, whereas Rabbi Akiva would hold, Achas Bachayev, Achas Moise, Amen, Ksubas Ben Nidchin. That Ksubas Ben Nidchin doesn't apply in that case, and therefore therefore Rachel's children have no greater rights over that 200 than Leah's children. But the Gemara says, Omar Rabba, Ashkachtinu L'Rabbanan Debei Rab, I found the Chachamim of Yeshiva. Debei Rab could mean the actual Yeshiva of Rab, although Rabba was a few generations later, or it could just mean Bei Rab in general could mean the Yeshiva. Anyway, he says, I found the Chachamim, the Yasmir Kamri. They were sitting and saying, no, there's a different way we can understand the Machlokas. They both, Rabbi Akiva and Ben Nanas, can be agreeing that there is the concept of Ksumas Ben Indichrin. The Machlokas could be, as we were saying, whether the Ksuba that has to be paid to Leah or her children is considered Moser. Do we say if the estate is 600 or less? Do we say if the estate is 600 or less, that we say that the ksuba that's yet to be paid out is considered moiser? Therefore, we can still earmark 200 for Rachel's children, and the other 400 is going to have to be paid out to Leah's children. Doesn't matter. We still have moiser dinner, and therefore ksubas ben nidchin is in effect. So the Benanas would be holding yes. On the other hand, we could say that not. So that would be the machlokas. Marisav ksubas nasas moisav chavat of ruad in the balchoyv. Ben Nanas would hold that the ksuba can be considered moiser, and similarly a balchoyv. Suppose that it wasn't a ksuba. Suppose it was a regular balchoyv was demanding the 400. We could still say that's considered moiser. Marisav and Rabbi Akiva would hold ain't ksuba nasas moisav chavat of ruad in the balchoyv. So the chachamim Rabbi is saying wanted to explain it that way. But I told them, says Rabbah, no, you can't say that it's the same thing between a ksuba and a bal choiv. When it's a bal choiv, everybody would agree, even Rabbi Akiva, that the choiv can be considered moiser. Because after all, the shtar was against the entire estate. So all of them have an equal obligation to pay it off. So, in other words, they've accomplished the mitzvah of priyas bal choiv mitzvah, as we learned in the previous parak. So therefore, we can say that that's considered moiser. Kipligi miksuba. The machlokas would be only about a ksuba where the choiv is not a regular choiv, but rather a ksuba. So Bananas would say it's still considered like any regular choiv. And Rabbi Akiva would say it's not really considered a choiv because it's not really considered a regular kind of choiv because they themselves are getting something. So therefore, it's not like a regular choiv. And the Ritzvah points out also that priyas bal choiv mitzvah, but maybe a ksuba is a different kind of obligation after all. It's not really a choiv of the same kind as. Yeah, well, with Darud Aiso, did Abban. The point is, it's one thing when the Malva has given out money as opposed to over here where she did. Okay, Okay, so we'll continue the discussion tomorrow. We'll continue the discussion over Yom Kippur, Be'ez Hashem, discussing this point of this machloikas of the Nanas and Rabbi Akiva, and figure out whether how exactly it relates to our Mishnah. Okay. Everyone,